for this quarter and next quarter, had an idea. What do you call a deer with one eye? What do you call a deer with one eye? You know, you look like you know. What do you call a deer with one eye? A good eye deer. All right. That was a rehearsal. Let's do it for real now, so people watching online understand. That's funny. It's humor. I had a good idea. I think it's a good idea about the next few quarters of our time here on Wednesday evening. As I mentioned at the very tippy top of class, this is the first session, first class of this new Wednesday night quarter. And as you know, from Sunday in the adult class in here, we are studying 1st, 2nd, 3rd John. And in the adult class this quarter, I want to begin what will be a two-quarter survey of the Old Testament. I'm excited about this. I have on the docket 24 lessons, some TBD, but the plan, the grand plan, is to have 12 this quarter, 12 next quarter. That gives us a bye week in there. And that also will lead us to summer quarter 2019, which, Lord willing, will be summer series again for us here at Augusta Road. And I really like the idea, and I think so far it's a front-runner idea, to look at Hebrews chapter 11 in our summer series. That's the most Old Testament, New Testament chapter you can get in the Bible. And so I think a nice on-ramp to that study would be a survey of the Old Testament, hitting some of the big highlights, people and events, and taking a closer look at how the Old Testament is presented to us. I remember my mind really just melting nearly in preaching school when I had to dig into Jewish history. It was my hardest class in preaching school, and the one that I probably did the worst in, because I lacked a big picture, zoomed out view of the Old Testament. We really dug into 1st, 2nd Kings, 1st, 2nd Chronicles, and, you know, it was just zigging and zagging. And I didn't exactly, you know, I didn't exactly understand how it all fit. So that began kind of a passion, a quest to better understand the Old Testament in its presentation, and to share some of these maybe lesser-known points or maybe forgotten points, or, hey, maybe some of y'all in here will know everything I'm saying, which is fine with me. But these things are ones that are not always the most clear in our minds, and certainly in my mind at that time was way, way cloudy. So I'm looking forward to kind of a survey of the Old Testament, putting all the pieces together. So let's get started tonight. Let's get started right now. Old Testament history, from Genesis chapter 1 till now. Spitball with me about how many years we're talking about. I'm talking about Genesis chapter 1 to December 5th, 2018. Plus or minus a few. How many years are we talking? Okay. Six-ish, seven-ish thousand years. How many of those, hey, are we good with that answer, by the way? Like it, love it, hate it, want to amend it? 6-7 years is 6 to 7,000-ish years is the answer presented. Y'all good with that? Hey, so far so good. Keep on being disagreeable and we'll have a great class. Only kidding. This is this is not super hard in its thrust, right? It's pretty, you know, it's pretty widely accepted that we have approximately 4,000 years of Old Testament history, approximately 2,000 years of New Testament history, and oh, by the way, when we talk about this history of the Bible till now, that's also kind of a proxy question for age of the earth, right? Since Genesis chapter 1 starts with the creation of the world. If we're talking about 6,000-7,000 years from Genesis chapter 1 till now, we're looking at an earth that is, you know, approximately that old, certainly under 10,000 years old, which is just kind of, you know, the young earth, which we all just kind of said yeah to, the young earth is a very polarizing subject in science, in apologetics. It doesn't need to be. If you want some extra info on this, next week is a really good time for me to give it to you. When next week we'll be talking about the flood. Before that, though, I want to talk a bit about patriarchy. Okay, so what comes to mind when we mention patriarchy, the patriarchal age? What are some thoughts that you have at that name? Okay, and an era in which God spoke to people through the heads of families, Sam said, and he nailed it, as you knew he would. Look at Hebrews chapter 1. Hebrews chapter 1, does somebody have verse 1 right there for us? If you got chapter 1, you got verse 1. If you have it in front of you, feel free to read it for us tonight as we get started. Hebrews 1:1. Did I say 11:1 or did you hear 11:1? Hebrews 1:1, please.
Long ago, at many times and in many ways, God spoke to our fathers by the prophets.
Thank you. Thank you. So, the patriarchal age, as Sam shared and touched on, was a period of time, a dispensation of time. How many great periods of time or dispensations or ages, depending on how old the Bible study material you use is, you may see either one of those three titles, age or period, or not many people use that term, dispensation. How many of them are there?
Three,
right? And patriarchal is the first. And go ahead. Say it again. Okay, all right. Yes, the antediluvians are those who lived before the flood, right? Anti means against or before. So the patriarchal age would certainly be in play at that period of time, the time before the flood. In fact, the patriarchal age is the entire book of Genesis, right? So far, so good. I mean, none of this is super, super mind-melting. The patriarchal age is the entire book of Genesis. Now, we mentioned that in Old Testament history, we have approximately how many years? About 4,000, give or take. I'm not a super big picky numbers guy, but 4,000-ish. More than half of that is the book of Genesis. 22, 23, of course we're counting down, so do your own math, because I hate the stuff, but we're counting down in the Old Testament time to the birth of Christ. So, you know, forward numbers, 22, 23, 24, somebody want to say 2,500? I don't know. It's fine with me. That is the scope of the book of Genesis, right? The Mosaic law was given where?
In Exodus,
I'll take, or the book of Exodus. Where on planet Earth was the Mosaic law given? Mount Sinai. You got a date for that? Anybody? 1300, 1500 BC. You want to split the difference, call it like 1400 BC. So, and that, you know, this is what's fascinating. Here we are in like Exodus chapter 20, right? This much Old Testament. Man, I like this Bible and don't want to tear it up. But I want to show you. This much Old Testament covers about two-thirds of Old Testament history, right? So we still have, look here, we still have so much more Old Testament after Exodus chapter 20. And this remaining Old Testament that we have after Exodus chapter 20, this much right here, happens in a fairly short time, right? It feels like forever because it's so long. But this happens in the remaining 1400 years we described. So the patriarchal age happened from Genesis chapter 1 to the giving of the law of Moses, at which time the Mosaic age, Mosaic period, Mosaic dispensation began. And we'll save this discussion for another class, but discussion kind of rages about whether or not there were hard stops to these ages. You know, the way it's illustrated in the old Jewel Miller film strips, which I love, is stop, and then Mosaic Age, stop, and then Christian Age. Maybe it happened that way. But there's some interesting evidence to discuss along those lines. All right. So we have the patriarchal age, an age that is prominent in our Old Testaments, takes more than half of the Old Testament time frame, Old Testament time frame, about 4,000 years. The book of Genesis, 22, 23, 24, 2500 years. So when we talk about patriarchy, we're talking about something that is much more prominent in the Old Testament than it might at first appear, right? Because you think, oh, book of Genesis, one book out of how many books of the Old Testament? Yeah, so one out of 39, not too big of a deal, right? Well, not necessarily, because that one book covers half of the Old Testament time frame, plus or minus. So the patriarchal age was a period, a dispensation, an age of time in which God spoke to people through the heads of families. I'm a head of a family tonight as I stand before you. But if I were living under the patriarchal age, I probably would not be one of the people to whom God spoke. Because back in these days, as is still kind of the case in some cultures worldwide, their families were more clannish. They were more extended families. Under a patriarchal system, those of us in here, my age or thereabouts, we would probably, you know, be in the clan or the tribe of our father or father-in-law, or maybe even grandfather if still living. So when we talk about father rule, it maybe is a bit of a misnomer, because not every biological dad was one of the ones who was receiving instructions from the Lord. You know, this was much more clannish, much more tribal. And the Lord would speak these commandments to these heads of families who would then disseminate it, spread it to their extended family and beyond. What's something else that pops out about the patriarchal age? The importance of genealogy. Establishing one as a part of one's family. Sure. The patriarchal age lacked something that the Mosaic age had. A written law? Yeah. Not exactly what I was thinking, but yeah. Let's talk about that. Under the patriarchal age, the law was not codified. So, well, what's that mean? You tell me. The law was not codified. One of the wonderful facets about the law of Moses is there it was, buddy, written in stone. Here's what you better do. Patriarchal age was not like that. It was an oral law, as we've just described. God would speak to the heads of families, and what God would say to one head of family may be different than what God would say to another head of family. You get what I mean? So each family, each patriarch, had this direct line with God. God, Hebrews 1:1, would speak to these fathers, and he would reveal to them his will, and it would, of course, then be their responsibility to obey that will, but it could be different from tribe to tribe. You know, we have Abraham being told to sacrifice his son. Was every patriarch told to sacrifice his son? Nuh-uh. Abraham was told to leave his land and separate from his family. Was every patriarch supposed to do that? No. So it was a very fluid law. Unlike the Mosaic law, where God says, thou shalt not steal, was that a rule for everybody? Yeah. The Mosaic law, where God says, remember the Sabbath and keep it holy, that's something everybody's got to do. So the patriarchal age was an uncodified law. It was an oral law, not written down, and also not the same necessarily for every practitioner. So, under the patriarchal law, it would be next to impossible, really, to look at somebody and identify him as a God-fearer or not. You know, if we lived under the patriarchal age and we were doing what God told us to do, we could be completely different from you living under the patriarchal age doing what God told you to do. You know, if we were living under the patriarchal age, seeing Abraham leave his family and go to the land that God would show him, if we were living under the patriarchal age, seeing Abraham sacrifice or attempt to sacrifice his son Isaac, we might think he was doing something against God. To the contrary, Abraham was obeying God. So it was much harder under the patriarchal law to identify somebody who's following God just like you. In the Mosaic age, that got much easier, because if you are following the law of Moses, well, I know what the law of Moses says, and if you're following the law of Moses, I'll see you doing the same thing that I'm doing, because the law of Moses, you know, is equal in each of our adherence to it. And especially in this New Testament age, or this Christian age, or period, or dispensation, God now has what kind of law? A law that applies to everybody in the world. What do we call that? What kind of law do we call that? A universal law. Everybody, not just the Jews or any physical nationality, but everybody now has to hear, believe, repent, confess, be baptized to be saved. So we see, as we move from patriarchy to Mosaic to Christian, we see some high points of distinction among those ages. I mentioned Abraham sacrificing his son, making an offering to God. Whose job was that to do under the Mosaic age? Who was offering sacrifices to God under the Mosaic age? The priests were. Under the patriarchal age, you see, there was notably no priesthood. We see a man like Abraham offering sacrifices. We also see a man like Job. Job chapter 1, verse 5. Offering sacrifices for his sons. So if the book of Job happens under the Mosaic period, either Job is a Levite or Job's doing something wrong, because in the Mosaic period, it was only the Levites. Job chapter 1, verse 5. It was only the Levites who were the priests from the tribe of Levi, not just any old Levite, you know. The priests were Levites, but not all Levites were priests. So there is mounting evidence, I believe, to support the claim that Job here is a patriarch. Which point I bring up now to help us see how our Bible is arranged, okay? If we're saying that Job's like Abraham, a patriarch like Abraham, then we have a long way between Genesis and Job. You know, shouldn't Job be closer to Genesis if they're the same time frame? Well, helpful fact, the Old Testament, New Testament, this is true about two, but we're talking about the Old Testament. The Old Testament is not arranged chronologically. The Old Testament is arranged how, Sam? Not chronologically, so it's arranged by topics. It's arranged topically. So when we talk about the Old Testament and the subdivisions of the Old Testament, remember we said how many books are in the Old Testament? How many? And these 39 books which make up the Old Testament are not just kind of strewn in there. These books are arranged chronologically, not chronologically, but topically. Where we have the books of the law, the books of Moses, the Pentateuch, the law, and then we have history, and then poetry. The book of Job, as you may have just now recalled, is in the poetry section of the Old Testament. And then major and minor prophets. So the Old Testament is arranged topically. And if you really want to wring out all the knowledge you can from these 39 books of the Old Testament, I think that's something you need to know. The Old Testament is arranged topically, not chronologically. So as we read the book of Job, our thinking goes back to Abraham more so than it does over to David. But as we turn the page from Job, we're up here in Psalms, where David's the star. So it becomes helpful, necessary. I don't know how necessary it is, but it becomes useful to say, okay, I'm reading Job, but I'm understanding that I'm reading about a patriarch living probably in the early part of Genesis. Job is believed to be one of the earliest books of our Old Testament, books of our Bible. And if you flip over to the very famous 40th and 41st chapters of the book of Job, we have mentioned they're made of two critters. Who are they? Leviathan and Behemoth. Job 40, verse 15. Job 41, verse 1. We have Behemoth, Leviathan mentioned respectively. And you conduct your own study on this. You do your own examination here. But more than a few people analyzing the descriptions of these animals here conclude that these might be dinosaurs. If you have a study Bible, they may throw out ideas of alligators or hippopotamuses or something like that. Go ahead, Sam.
Crocodile,
right? But it doesn't. But those shoe doesn't exactly fit those, right? This is not a study of that necessarily, unless you have a point to share or a question about those things. Have you heard? You've heard before. Some of you in here, I'm sure, have heard before the theory that suggests Behemoth, Leviathan are Old Testament references to dinosaurs. And the only reason I bring that up, because if true, then we're putting the book of Job way back here towards the very beginning of Genesis. Very, very probable before the flood of Genesis chapter 6, which will be the subject of next week's study. Because it is again theorized, and we'll drill down on some of the points next week, that the topography, the makeup of the world changed after the flood and made it very possibly uninhabitable for these big, huge, terrible lizards. You don't have to believe all that if you don't want to. But the pieces of that puzzle fit together very nicely. Very nicely. And if there's interest, we'll drill down and talk a bit more about that. From Genesis chapter 1 to the flood, this is maybe a fact best saved for next week, but we're here now. From Genesis chapter 1 to the flood, we have, anybody venture a guess how many years we have? About 1,500. So, you know, we hit the ground running, boy, when we're in the early part of Genesis. I mean, here we are, Genesis chapter 6, just getting started good. I say with all due respect to the Bible, to Genesis, I love it. But we're in the very tippy part of the book of Genesis, and so much of the entirety of its time frame is passing by, right? We'll talk more about that flood next week. But Job has all of the calling cards of being a patriarch. What was another characteristic of the patriarchal age? You think about Abraham, you think about Isaac, you think about Jacob. What comes to mind? What are a few things that come to mind when you think about these three rich folks? I beg your pardon? They had long life, long, full life, filled with physical blessings. I know for us, 2018, we look at the promise made to Abraham, which will be a session in this Old Testament survey, and we think of it as being, you know, heavily spiritual. However, it's worth pointing out that two-thirds of this Abrahamic promise is physical. God says to Abraham, I will make you a great nation. I will give you a borderless land, and I will bless your seed. Well, it's the seed promise that we latch on to now, but God is promising Abraham here physical prosperity, physical blessings, a big family, which back in those days was a blessing, a lot of land, which back in those days was a blessing, and may still be if you got somebody to take care of it, I reckon, you know. So these were the calling cards of patriarchs. You think about Abraham. He was extremely wealthy, so much so that his and his nephew's herds were too big to exist in the same space. Remember the separation between Abraham and Lot? A cause of that was, hey, God is blessing me tremendously. God's blessing you tremendously. We've got too much for the land to hold. You think about Jacob and you think about Isaac. These are Isaac and Jacob. These are extremely well off physically folks. Job, by the way, Job has this characteristic too, lending further support to our placement of him as a patriarch. Job was extremely well off physically. So under the patriarchal system, God rewarded his followers physically. The physical blessings were off the chart high. Spiritual blessings, you know, you read about the patriarchal age and you don't get just a ton of spiritual blessings coming at you. Under the Mosaic age, the spiritual blessings increase some, right? They are given a priesthood, means to contact the people. Under the patriarchal age, they have a manifestation of God's presence. Not the patriarchal age, I mean the Mosaic age. Under the Mosaic age, they have a manifestation of God's presence in what form? The tabernacle that they carried with them, and then later the temple. Yeah, the patriarchal. The Christian age today is inversely correlated to the patriarchal age. Where today, you know, God is not promising to give us everything in the world we can imagine. As a matter of fact, if you read your New Testaments, God is promising to keep us alive. And physically, though, that's the extent of God's physical promises to us today. I'll keep you alive. You know, you won't go hungry. You won't be thirsty. But spiritually, God is offering us blessings, the likes of which the patriarchs and those under the Mosaic system never experienced before. So we, for so many reasons, we are thankful to live in this Christian age, the third and final age of time. In fact, if we continue on in that Hebrews chapter 1 reading, it says in verse 2, God in these last days has spoken to us through his son, Jesus. So we are living in the last period of time, the final period of time, because after this time is over, Jesus is coming back and the world is ending. Patriarchal age, super cool, super important, and I dare say it encapsulates much more of our Old Testaments than it at first may appear, all right? We're still in the patriarchal age next week when we talk about the flood, but we will do so with more targeted info on that. All right, thank y'all very much.
Thank you for listening to the Augusta Road Church of Christ. Located in Greenville, South Carolina, the Augusta Road congregation worships God in spirit and in truth in a friendly and loving environment. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for Augusta Road COC. And if you're ever in Greenville, South Carolina, we would love for you to come by for a visit.